From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine, Friday, September 14th, 2018. And on this day, proposed changes to the Endangered Species Act have conservationists worried. And we'll talk Maine politics with Mel Leary and Steve Missler. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Norway Savings, supporting the colorful vision of Maine's business owners. Live your life in color. NorwaySavings.bank.
Sweeping changes proposed to the Federal Endangered Species Act have conservation groups and others alarmed about protecting plants and animals on the verge of extinction in Maine and around the country. Critics of the 45-year-old act say it's been a failure, that less than 3% of threatened or endangered species ever make it off the list. But supporters point to a range of other benefits that come from recovery efforts, and in a state like Maine, they say they're not hard to find. Susan Sharon has more.
At Goose Rocks Beach in Kennebunkport, stake and twine marking off nesting areas for threatened piping plovers are taken down by the end of August. The chicks have hatched for the season, and if they haven't done so already, are preparing to make their fall migration as far south as the Gulf of Mexico. The sparrow-sized shorebirds first made the list in the 1980s, and Laura Minnick-Zitsky, the director of Maine Audubon's Coastal Bird Program, says this has been a good year for them.
Actually, in 2018, we had more nesting plovers than we've had since we began monitoring in 1981, 68 pair. So it's not a lot, but for us, it's good.
Piping plovers were a common sight along beaches until the late 19th century, when their feathers made them and other birds a sought-after target for hunters and the hat-making trade. The Migratory Bird Act of 1918 helped restore some of their numbers, but then beach development and recreation took a toll.
I feel personally responsible because we took their place. You know, we've taken their home. I am living in their home. And I'm thankful to be here, and I'm happy to share.
Carol Sherman says she's seen the population of Goose Rocks Beach and development grow over the past 75 years. She's been coming here since she was a child. But about 7 years ago, she and her husband bought a house and moved in full time. She says her first introduction to their new neighbors, the plovers, wasn't exactly positive.
We had four rescue dogs. We had four grandchildren under the age of four. And we went to walk to our new beach, and there was this nest and with these birds there. And I went, what is happening? You know, we've waited all these years, and here we have these birds in the, you know, right in the middle of the path.
Since then, Sherman says she's learned more about plovers from staff at Maine Audubon and Maine's Inland Fisheries and Wildlife Department. The more she learned, the more she grew to love them and realized that plovers are good neighbors and good parents, courageous in the face of all kinds of ecological and other challenges. She says she doesn't mind following rules to avoid interfering with their nesting sites. But recovery efforts for plovers and all kinds of imperiled plants and wildlife could look a whole lot different going forward.
We've seen species such as the bald eagle come back from the brink of being almost completely wiped out. That's a great example of what this law was intended to do.
Republican Senator John Barrasso of Wyoming is among those in Congress pushing for an overhaul of the Endangered Species Act. Speaking on the floor of the U.S. Senate in July, he said a new approach is needed because, unlike the bald eagle, only about 3% of protected species ever make it off the list.
Mr. President, I'm a doctor. And as a doctor, if I were to admit 100 patients to the hospital, and only 3 of every 100 I admitted recovered enough to be discharged, then maybe those patients ought to look for a different doctor. We're in the same situation now with the Endangered Species Act.
Barrasso is proposing that states be given more control over management of endangered species. House Republicans and the Trump administration are also proposing changes to the ESA. Reaction from environmental groups has been swift and fierce. Brett Hartle of the Center for Biological Diversity told the Huffington Post that the changes would slam a wrecking ball into the most crucial protections for endangered wildlife. He also said that if the Trump administration's regulations had been in place in the 70s, the bald eagle and the gray whale would now be extinct.
The fundamental thing that is concerning is that the changes are very insidious.
Laura Minnick-Zitsky of Maine Audubon says among her objections is a proposal to stop treating threatened species the same way as an endangered species. Instead, protections would be determined on a case-by-case basis. Another proposal would allow government agencies to consider the economic consequences of listing, a strong departure from existing law, which relies solely on science. The Trump administration also wants to limit how far into the future potential harms to species such as climate change are considered by basing predictions on the foreseeable future.
What it really boils down to is that foreseeable future is to be defined on a species-by-species basis. I think it leaves a lot up to, it leaves a lot up to political whim rather than scientific evidence, which is very alarming to me.
We are very concerned about rollbacks or attempts to weaken the Endangered Species Act.
Tom Abello of the Nature Conservancy's Maine chapter says it's one thing to make improvements to the ESA to ensure that there's some flexibility, but it's another to restrict funding for species protection and make changes that aren't based in science. He points to endangered Atlantic salmon in Maine as an example of how listing helped encourage dam removal and restore rivers, even if the salmon's numbers haven't significantly responded.
I think really the best thing that ESA has done for salmon is to provide the resources and provide funding for our federal agencies to take those actions to improve habitat. So whether that be the Penobscot River, whether that be the Sheepscot River, those conservation actions to improve habitat sets the stage for the salmon to come back.
Along the way, Abello says the efforts have aided other species, such as alewives. Back at Goose Rocks Beach, Virginia Almader says she thinks about that as she looks out at the ocean from her deck. She's worried about the recent spate of seal deaths and reports about endangered right whales getting trapped in fishing gear. All species, she says, deserve more protection, not less.
There is an interdependence, and if we take out one of the links in the chain, then that affects all the species, ourselves included. And the emphasis seems to be on money, making money, unfortunately.
Written comments on the Trump administration's proposed changes to the ESA are being accepted until September 24th. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
Today, we launched a new series of talks on Morning Edition, tapping into the expertise of our political reporters, Steve Missler and Mal Leary. Host Erwin Gratz began with the race for Maine's highest state office.
The fall gubernatorial campaign began in earnest early this week. The four candidates made their first joint appearance in Lewiston. Steve, did anyone distinguish themselves during this debate?
Well, I have to say, Erwin, that the event itself wasn't conducive to creating separation between the candidates. And that was because most of the questions were known in advance, so they could prepare, and they had basically each 3 minutes to talk. But that said, you could see some contours of the race to come based on the statements that they made. Republican Sean Moody did a pretty good job of leaning really heavily on his business experience and his personal story, which is a compelling one, frankly. Now, by contrast, Democrat Janet Mills talked a lot about her experience in Maine politics. While some voters will value that experience, they also want to hear what she's going to do, not what she has done. And then finally, I'll just say this real quick. The independents, they kind of use this forum to introduce themselves while talking about what they want to do.
The poll that AARP did of voters 50 and older, now that shows that this governor's race is very tight between Janet Mills and Sean Moody. Both were within the margin of error. Mal, how important are those 50 and older voters likely to be in the final outcome?
This is a very different election year. We're seeing greater mobilization among young people than we have seen in past elections, far more energy. So I'm not sure how important it will be, except in a race that's as close as this one appears to be, every single vote is going to count. And we have to remember, we usually cast a third or more of our ballots prior to Election Day. So the campaigns really have to gear up because people will be making decisions and voting in the first part of October.
I want to jump in real quick and talk about something that Mal and I discussed yesterday. That poll and the previous poll that we have as a benchmark for this race, it showed something that was very, I think, very important, which is the importance to the people that responded to those polls of healthcare. In both cases, it seems as though healthcare is surpassing what was traditionally the number one issue for people, which is the economy.
How this is going to work out is going to depend a lot on how these candidates focus their messages.
Yeah, so Steve, let me ask you, have either of these independents done anything yet to begin to separate themselves?
Well, that's tough to say. I mean, if you go by the polls that we've seen, the answer is no. You know, they're both polling in the low single digits, I might add. Together, though, they can still have an impact on the race. I mean, they have nowhere to go but up, I would imagine. And I thought Alan Caron, again, demonstrated that during the forum on Monday, where he did a really good job, I think, of talking about what he wants to do, contrasting that with what's happened over the last 8 years. Good example is when he talked about immigration.
And we shouldn't care really what they look like or what their first language is or even who they worship. We should care that they want to help us build a brighter future.
Now, what you don't hear at the end of that is Janet Mills saying, nicely put. And it's interesting because Janet Mills has the most to lose, I would argue, of Alan Caron improving his standing in the polls.
We're in for a rough ride in this election, even worse than what we saw 4 years ago.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. Appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Happy to do it.
Maine Public political correspondents Mal Leary and Steve Missler. They'll be regularly taking Maine's political pulse on Morning Edition and Maine Things Considered. For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Friday, September 14th, 2018. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.